To Cut a Blade of Grass by Cynthia Garland. The night air was too warm for March. Its touch held odd promises. A solitary figure stood in the middle of the parking lot, stock still, arms outstretched, staring up at the stars. She didn't care that she must have looked quite out of place. The world didn't feel like the world she knew, and she was under no obligation to adhere to its conventions. She filled her lungs with the sweet sense of a premature springtime, trying her best to memorize the intricacies of this one balanced moment to carry with her in the difficult days ahead. One more deep breath, and she was ready. It took forever to walk to the door, and even longer for the lift to arrive. Hospitals are unnatural places. Time and space are different. The light is a funny kind of yellow. The hallways grow longer with each step. Every surface smells of chemicals. Larger-than-life men look like small dolls tucked away in their beds. Her father's eyes were open. Someone had turned on the television for him, but he wasn't watching it. His head was turned and he was staring at some fixed, faraway point. She stood rooted in the doorway. The news programme was reporting a blunder one of the celebrities had made while attempting to survive on a popular reality programme. It was just the type of thing that would inspire channel-changing behaviour in her dad. Yet on this day, he didn't move. The stroke had left him weak on the left side and robbed him of the ability to speak. Ever so softly, she stepped to his bedside.
"Hi, Dad. It's me, Rosie."
His skin was as pale as the sheets he lay on. His hand felt too cool as she held it. One of the pixie-like people that always get hired to read the weather was now chirping away on the television. She took a cue from it.
"It's glorious out tonight. Quite unseasonably warm."
She had no idea why she was whispering. Her dad's eyes swam to meet hers. Suddenly, in that moment, Rosie felt like such a little girl again. She cleared her throat and continued.
"There's not a cloud in the sky. The stars are so bright you can see them despite all the lights from town. When you get a bit stronger, I'll bring your telescope from home and set it up so you can use it here at the window. Well, there's no telling how long this warm spell will last, though. It's a peculiar weather pattern. I heard two experts on the radio today. One was blaming global warming and the other was predicting an ice age."
The corner of his mouth twitched.
"Was that a smile?"
A tone of hopeful encouragement came out as a strained squeal. She imagined her grin was equally forced, and no matter what shape he was in, her dad could always see right through her. She turned to the welcome distraction of the television once more. The sports segment had wrapped up, and they were closing with a series of humorous fluff pieces. A burglar was arrested when he posted his activities on a social networking site during his crime. A naked gardener injured himself in a bizarre landscaping accident. A mysterious creature on two legs was sighted skulking in the moors of Northumberland.
"It's no doubt making its way to Loch Ness to take tea with family,"
she quipped.
I think an interview programme's on next. Or I can read to you if you like. I brought some magazines and today's newspaper."
His hand closed on hers.
"Well, that's a nice strong grip. You'll be better in no time."
She bent over to gaze directly into his face. His mouth quivered.
"Are you trying to say something?"
she asked. He swallowed and tried again, struggling harder this time. She leaned in and held her ear to his lips. He rasped something that she couldn't make out but pretended to understand.
Rosie was halfway through the headline story in the Times when her father drifted into a gentle sleep. His nurse came in on her rounds as Rosie was gathering her things to leave.
"He seems tired this evening. Is there any change in his condition?" she asked.
The nurse shook her head.
"No, he's the same."
She smiled reassuringly and added as an afterthought, "He's probably a bit tired from his other visitor." Rosie stopped folding the newspaper.
"What other visitor?"
"Well, I've no idea," the nurse replied, as she noted the readings from the machines monitoring her patient.
"Well, he was a nice chap, a bit eccentric. Did he mention his name?"
"I didn't ask him. Is there a problem?"
"No, it's not a problem. I just didn't know anyone else knew Dad was here." "What did this man look like?"
The nurse shook her head.
"I didn't pay much attention.
Curly blonde hair. Maybe in his mid-40s, although it's hard to say. He was one of those ageless types."
"You said he was eccentric?"
Rosie pressed.
"Well, that is to say, he had a rather peculiar dress sense. At first, I thought he'd come to entertain in the paediatric ward. Your dad seemed to respond well to him, though."
Rosie spent the next 30 minutes in the cafe down the street. Then, instead of going home, she stopped by her dad's room one more time. She entered to find her father being placed into a wheelchair by a nurse she'd never met before, who nearly jumped out of her skin when Rosie entered.
"Sorry, I didn't mean to startle you," she said. "I'm his daughter. Can you tell me what's going on?"
"Oh, sure,"
the new nurse replied.
"Doctor's orders. He's to sit up in a chair for 15 minutes each day to build up his strength. It's part of his physical therapy."
"I see.
I'll give you some privacy."
"No need."
No, it's okay. I have to get to my other patients. Enjoy your visit."
Her words trailed behind her as she hurried from the room. Rosie didn't think any more of it and sat reading to her dad until visiting hours were over. She was no more than a mile from the hospital when her mobile phone rang. Her dad had gone missing.
"What do you mean, missing?"
Rosie bawled into the receiver.
Did you check with the nurse that put him in the wheelchair? She was short. Dark hair, American accent?"
But that description did not fit anyone they'd ever employed. By the time she'd wheeled the car around and sped back to her room, her dad had reappeared. He was lying quite contentedly in his bed. There were embarrassed apologies all round and some confused explanation with plenty of maybes and could-haves mixed in for good measure. In the end, it was agreed that he had been mistaken for another patient to be taken for tests and was returned once the mistake was discovered. No harm was done. In fact, her father seemed somewhat rejuvenated by the whole affair. He gazed at her with such serene affection that she just knew all was well. She stood by her car without opening the door. Just stood, letting the warm breeze from a season yet to be flow around her. Grateful for the solitude.
"Do you like parsnips?"
said a voice right next to her. Rosie spun round so quickly she would have fallen if not for the stranger's steadying hand.
"Well, they are one of the hidden treasures of the earth,"
he continued.
"What are parsnips?"
he enthused.
"Titillating to the tongue and packed with nutrients. They are one of the soil's most productive roots, yet largely overlooked by modern cooks. So many things that hold such promise are ignored. It's a crime, really."
She blinked. The stranger continued.
"Parsnips remind me of people, you know. They have so much to offer, if given a mere chance. Afforded their proper place in the scheme of things."
His warm smile and ease of manner made him feel like a friend, although she hadn't a clue what he was on about. And he did fit the eccentric description.
"Do you know my father?"
"Indeed I do."
He extended his hand.
"I'm John Smith. Pleasure to meet you, Rosie."
She grasped his smooth hand, grateful for its warmth.
"The nurse told me Dad had a visitor. Thank you so much for coming."
There was an unexpected catch in her voice. His eyes deepened and drew her into them.
Your father talks of you constantly. He's very proud, you know.
She made a wry noise that meant she wasn't so sure. It was met with a quizzical expression from the stranger, which made her feel compelled to explain.
Well, I want to be a writer, you see. I made top marks in English and literature, which qualifies me for absolutely nothing on the job market. I'm going back for a degree in business later this year, once Dad gets better.
He pursed his lips and nodded.
Business, eh? You sure about that? Well, I'm sure I like to eat. Well, there's nothing wrong with business. Those skills are quite necessary in the overall scheme of things. However, as the centuries pass and empires rise and fall, it is the great works of artistic endeavour that endure the ravages of time. Take it from me.
Her phone rang. She pulled it from her pocket and looked at the number. It was the hospital. She turned to excuse herself for a moment, and when she turned back, he had vanished. The doctor was in one of his moods. Hands in pockets, brow knit, he stared holes in the starfield on the scanner. Perry circled the console tentatively and drew up to his side.
Well, that was quite kind of you, you know.
Hmm? He said, distractedly.
Oh, taking that old man into the future so he could see his daughter's wedding. His grandchildren. Be at his daughter's side when she died.
Yes, yes. The doctor waved his hand as if shooing the words away.
I didn't think you were allowed to do that.
What? Well, of course I can. I'm a Time Lord, in case you didn't remember. Perry sighed forcibly.
Seems I can't say anything right.
The doctor sighed too. His smile was an apology.
Well, I didn't change anything, or at least nothing that I didn't intend to change. Who was he?
Walter Wibberley of Oldham, England.
Was he an important scientist?
Heavens no, the doctor laughed.
He was a baker. An excellent one at that. He made the finest Cornish pasties of anyone at any time on Earth. Well, how did you two meet?
As I said, the Cornish pasties. The doctor patted his stomach fondly.
I was passing his shop and the aroma was heavenly. Drew me in like a moth to a flame. I became his best customer and we became dear friends.
Did he know you were a Time Lord?
Oh, yes, I told him eventually. He had a family, so we never travelled together. But I did give him a telescope. He took up astronomy as a hobby, joked that he would use it to keep track of me.
Let me guess. He went on to make some great discovery as an amateur astronomer. Was it a new galaxy? Did he save Earth from a comet that was about to crash into it?
The doctor put his fists on his hips as he regarded his young companion.
You do have a vivid imagination. To answer your question, no, nothing of the sort. He just liked to look at the stars. And he baked things.
Oh, that's neat,
Perry exclaimed.
Neat?
The doctor spat the words as if it were bitter on his tongue.
What do you mean, neat?
Perry deflated slightly.
Well, you do have to admit that most of your friends we visit are big, important scientists or rulers of planets or something.
Ah, I see.
The doctor's tone softened.
Walter, dear old parsnip that he was, never achieved great fame, but he did what he did very well. And that made the lives of everyone he knew better in crucial and comforting ways. Well, I could be having my worst day, and a conversation with him, along with the odd pasty, and everything would be set right again. Is he...
The doctor nodded curtly. He's gone. Perry placed a consoling hand on the doctor's shoulder.
Well, at least we did what we came to do. I'm sure you made him very happy in the end.
The doctor forced a sad smile.
Thanks for your help, by the way. I didn't come to do that. The idea just sort of hit me once I saw him again. I came to keep Rosie from changing careers.
Do you know she was going to give up her writing?
But now she writes a best-selling book that influences the flow of events...
Will you stop?
Actually, she's not at all successful. and would have made more money in business, but then she wouldn't have taken the job at the bookshop and met her husband. She would write poems and stick them in his pockets. He found one on his way to work one day, which prompted him to smile at a man on the train. That man, in turn, made more humanely balanced decisions at his company, which meant the cleaning lady was not made redundant, so she had the money to buy an electronics kit for her son's birthday. The boy became an engineer and designed a component of the International Deep Space Telescope that long outlived its life expectancy and enabled your race to make those great astronomic discoveries you postulated a moment ago, and so on. So, I suppose Walter did contribute to a great astronomical discovery. Just not on his own, not with my telescope.
Oh, that's a bit of a stretch.
Perry didn't have a clue if he was joking or not.
It may seem so, but it's simple quantum theory.
Yeah, simple.
The doctor tapped her nose with his finger.
All things are interconnected. Every part of the universe is connected to every other part. That means everything and everyone matters, fame notwithstanding.
So, that two-minute conversation you had with Rosie changed the universe?
Precisely, my girl. There's an ancient proverb from your planet. To cut a blade of grass is to shake the universe.
Just think of me as an intergalactic multidimensional gardener. Perry laughed.
Well, now there's an image I never had till now.
Hey, all this talk is making me hungry. What's for dinner?
The doctor grinned.
Pasties, Perry.
Pasties. And parsnips.